SMQBs, episode 211. What's going on, fellas?
Hey, what is happening?
House, who are you bringing to the bar?
Hello, friends, and welcome to that special time of year for a tradition unlike any other.
Don't do it to me.
Will Rory be in all of his glory? Look at this beautiful bridge. Hey, Dottie, do you think you have a window into the bar? Because I sure would like to have a drink. That's right, folks. It's Jim Nance. I'm coming to the bar with you. Have a good podcast.
Wow, that's a stunning impression of Nance that I've ever heard.
Brutal. Brutal. Everything about it. Pope, what about you?
I'm going to bring Harry Diamond and Shane Lowry. Harry is Rory's caddy, and Shane Lowry is his best buddy. And I know you guys saw how cool that emotion was between the two after he won walking off 18. I just love that. I've always loved Shane Lowry. I love the Irish. I just love this whole thing. And I want to hear what they have to say about the inside scoop, how it all went down, and what did they do last night at the bar.
All right. Rooster, while we're talking about loving the Irish, I think that's a good spot for you to jump in.
Yeah, I was just sitting here thinking about what kind of whiskey Rory would be drinking with Shane Lowry, the Protestant kind or the Catholic kind? Anyway.
Yeah. Bushmills or Jameson, right?
I'm going to bring to the bar my favorite NFL draft prognosticator, Mel Kiper Jr.
Oh,
you bring him every year.
He doesn't even drink, so I'm going to try to get him hammered and loosen up a little bit, maybe change his hairstyle a whole bit.
All right. Milk, what about you?
Well, the NHL hockey season ends Thursday, I believe. Playoffs start on Saturday. So I'm going to bring Lightning head coach John Cooper. And
he's already at the bar.
He's at the bar. You're meeting him at the bar.
Because we are limping into the playoffs big time.
Oh, tell me about it.
Yeah. And he better have a good game plan because I don't like it what I'm seeing right now.
Just don't order a bourbon. You'll piss him off.
Hey. Change of tune there, Milk. You're riding pretty high a couple weeks ago.
I was until I went to two games in a row where we lost in overtime.
Oh, well, we've gotten it handed to us two games in a row. So
the Stars are limping in too.
Yeah. All right. I'm bringing two people to the bar. I am bringing Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri.
Yes.
And I just want to look at these two guys who are 3 points apart and ask them, so which one of you is the number one driver at McLaren this year? Mm-hmm. I just want to see how that's going to shake out because that has gotten very interesting.
It's all about qualifying, man. That's like we said last time. If you want to win the race, get the pole.
Yeah. Hey, Rooster, why don't you give some love to one of our sponsors?
Yeah. Hey, everyone. I'd like to throw some love towards our sponsor, Digital Law Marketing, DLM. You know, when you hire a digital marketing company for your law firm, it's all about results. That's what you want, and that's what counts. And in our business, results means clients. And DLM produces great results. We've had the pleasure of working with them for several years now, and I can tell you that we have gotten great clients as a result, and I cannot recommend them highly enough. If you are interested in their services, go to digitallawmarketing.com.
I second that emotion. All right, guys, we have some unfinished business we have to take care of here. We have Music Madness that we got to get through and wrap it up. We are in the Elite Eight. We're going to get this done right now today. And we're starting in the rap bracket with NWA versus the Beastie Boys. Who are we putting through here, guys?
What is that, a clash of two different ones?
I'm getting it off my chest. I'm going NWA.
I agree.
I'm with you. Let's do it.
It's you gotta go.
I'm with the Beasties, just for the record.
I'm going Public Enemy, but if you force me to, I'm taking NWA.
Oh my God, Rooster's still holding on to the Public Enemy grudge. For fuck's sake, get over it, man. All right, now let's go down to the metal hair bands. We've got Van Halen versus Metallica.
Oof.
I'm going Metallica. Van Halen's guitar riffs are amazing, but their songs kind of suck, other than
I'm taking Metallica. Come on.
Van Halen. They are the great show.
Oh, okay.
I'm taking Van Halen.
House, you're the deciding vote.
He's going to go Metallica.
I'm quite the hairband aficionado, and really tough.
You know he's going Metallica. Just do it.
He's going Metallica.
Put us out of our misery.
All right, then. I'm going to go with Pope. It's going to be Metallica.
All right. There you go.
My call.
Knew that was coming.
All right. Let's go to...
These are lesser brackets anyway on this side.
That's true.
All right. Well, let's go to the rock bracket. We've got Led Zeppelin versus the Rolling Stones.
Oh, holy crap.
Oh, wow. Ouch. That is...
That is an Elite Eight game that's the final.
I'm taking
Someone
Zeppelin.
Has to win.
I'm taking Zeppelin.
My two favorite bands growing up.
Well, choose one.
Give me Stairway to Heaven, baby. Not
Stairway to Heaven. That's the worst Led Zeppelin song ever.
We've got two for Zeppelin.
I'm going Rolling Stones.
Milk?
Come back to me.
House?
Oh, well, we're not even going to come back to you, Milk. It's got to be Kashmir. It's got to be Led Zeppelin.
All right, there we go.
Zeppelin going to California. It's all of it.
Can't argue with that.
Zeppelin was the four seed, by the way. All right, now to round out the final four, this is a tough one. Nirvana versus Pearl Jam.
That is brutal.
I have no idea how this is going to shake out.
I'm going to go in early to say that, sadly, if Kurt Cobain had survived, I think I might have gone with Nirvana over time, but, you know.
Body of work,
and for that reason, I'm going with Pearl Jam.
I'm with you, House. Pearl Jam.
Pearl Jam all the way, baby.
Yeah.
Pearl Jam. Okay, the two seed. All right. Final four. We've got NWA versus Metallica.
Wow. Bring me to that concert.
Wow.
That'd be an interesting concert crowd.
So the Rolling Stones are out and Metallica and NWA are in.
Hey, it's AI.
Well, listen, it was by genre.
All right. Yeah. I'm going NWA.
I'm with you, Rooster. No. I got NWA.
I'm going with Metallica.
I'm going Metallica.
Wow, Metallica into the final.
They're one of the greatest.
Sandman, baby.
All right. And then on the other side, here's a good one. Zeppelin versus Pearl Jam.
Jesus.
Zeppelin.
Yeah, I mean, I'm taking Zeppelin.
I hate to do this to Eddie, but I mean, it's not even a... Zeppelin is just a god.
It's over. Zeppelin's in.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Pope's picking Zeppelin. It's over.
Yeah, I'm going with Zeppelin.
You're the god. Too. I mean, I grew up...
I take Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
All right. Then the final. This is it for all the marbles. Metallica versus Led Zeppelin.
Oh, that's got to be a sweep for Led Zeppelin.
Yeah. I mean, it has to be. It's one shining moment.
I think Milk's hesitating.
It sounds like it's over.
No. I want your vote on the record.
I'm taking Metallica.
All right. I knew it. I knew he was going to. All right. Anybody else have Metallica? No?
Robert
ChatGPT, will you please?
Come on, man.
Yes. Will you please record One Shining Moment by Led Zeppelin?
All right. So Led Zeppelin comes through the SMQB's Music March Madness.
Can you imagine Robert Plant singing
One Shining Moment?
It's not unrealistic to think Led Zeppelin would win this tournament.
Listen, I think that was one for the ages. Just like the Masters this weekend.
Good segue.
Yeah.
Has Pope stopped crying yet?
I don't know. Pope, are you still crying?
He's just crying.
Let's not go there.
I just want the audience to know that Rory gets his Grand Slam. He makes the putt after trying to shit the bed at least two or three times.
Oh, boy.
And Pope's, just to bring everybody into the text chain of the SMQBs, actually, plus our favorite guest, Moose, Pope is like, I'm crying. Cheryl is crying.
Everyone's crying.
I want to know. I got questions.
Crying. We're all crying.
What kind of tears were these? Were this like a shed a tear, like a little?
It was his emoji tear.
Or were you like snotting all over yourself?
It was
waterfalls, snot bubbles, the whole thing.
It was a good sports cry for somebody that's not your team, but.
He's not your team.
He's not your team. You've never met him.
That's the first time ever.
Wait, serious, but for real,
the fucking
Pope,
world's
you
coming
watched,
to an end, and Pope's crying about.
Since you
Rory
watch more
McIlroy
more golf
winning,
than all
winning a golf tournament,
Pope. Since you watch more golf than all podcasts ever put together, where does this major rank amongst majors that you've watched?
To me, the Masters has always been it. Ever since 1986, and Jack is back on the second nine charge in 86, I've always been in love with the Masters. Having a chance to go there in 09, I just reinforced that. And seeing that drama unfold. And the thing about the Masters, if you think about it, is, and I think Rooster might have alluded to this, but the course really makes the tournament because everybody is so familiar with it. You're like, on 13, you know, when he laid up, I was like, I'm not sure. But then I'm like, okay, I'm fine with that. He gave himself a nice little wedge approach and put it in Rays Creek. I mean, you're like, you know, so many players over the years have done that. I mean, that's the great thing about the Masters is, you know, the second nine, like in your sleep, you could say what those holes are. And to see Rory overcome the demons that he created for himself on a hole by hole basis was just phenomenal. Nothing, I can't think of any kind of golf like it. You know, I mean, obviously 86 was a different time, but nothing modern, even close to like that final part of the Masters.
Well, I said, I think it's the best Masters we've had since Tiger won it the last time. Right. Yeah, I mean, 19. I remember that one where we were all texting back and forth, and it was like, holy smokes, he's going to do this. And it was just, it was wild. That was the last time, like, every single shot you were on the edge of your seat for. And this thing was, I mean, Nance put the biggest jinx on Rory. It was unbelievable. He really tried, didn't he?
Richie was like, you know, he's like measuring the sleeve on the 18th tee box. I mean, they're like, yeah, come on, guys.
Oh, it started on 12 where they started anointing him. You know, it was a coronation at that point.
I mean, how about before that, when they got all into his childhood and the poor Rory had to work at a golf course. My God, that must have killed him.
What I thought was good, it's funny, again, bring our listeners behind the scenes. You know, we didn't want to be a podcast that just talked about the shots that everyone's talked about by the time you've heard other podcasts. So we were talking about, is golf still the same minus Tiger? Or, you know, what does it say about golf when the course is the star? But all of that, I felt, got pushed to the side by the shot making that we saw. And what was really cool was that we saw, like, Rory versus Liv, Rory and Bryson, Rory versus, you know, another kind of, I guess he's getting up there a little bit, but Justin Rose and like a Rory versus the veteran, and then Rory versus the next generation and Oberg. Cause that guy, Oberg and Hovland, are definitely going to get one day.
What about Rory versus
his
Rory.
Demons too.
And Rory versus himself.
That was just awesome. There.
That was just awesome. And so I just thought, for golf, you know, you take Tiger out of the mix and you can still get what is one of the best major tournaments that we've seen in a long time. It was way beyond my expectations.
I'm sure Rory would have preferred to have gone into the 18th with a 5-stroke lead.
Yes.
But in some ways, that's how it had to happen for him. Right. I mean, everything, you know, that all the struggles and everything, it had to go that way with him, you know, his knees shaking together on the playoff hole to try and drain a 2.5-foot putt. But it just seemed like, okay, this makes sense for him to have to keep coming back and fight through it. I bet you he'll appreciate it one day.
And you know who else appreciated it? The PGA Tour.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Talk about we talked about this last week, how, I mean, it feels like it's dying in a way. And what a revival that was. But back to house your comments. I don't think we appreciate, and I have my personal issues with Rory McIlroy, but in terms of golf, the shot he hit on 15, I don't think we appreciate how fucking hard that shot was.
Oh my God.
I mean,
the hook shot.
The hook shot to, I mean, on to, I mean, th- that, that was, and Bryson had just gone in the water.
He did that shot twice.
No, but he had a 7-iron, what, 202?
Yeah, like 202, 209, something. Yeah.
With a hook.
But I feel like he did that twice. I don't remember the other. There was another hole.
17.
17.
I think the 15 was much harder.
Oh, yeah, yeah. 100%.
Never mind the fact that on the playoff hole, Rose throws a dart up onto the green, you know, to the damn playoff in the Masters, and he drops it 10 feet, right, 12 feet away. And Rory's like, okay, hold my beer.
He clearly did not watch the Phil Mickelson putt, because if he had read it like Mickelson, he would have made it.
I mean, Rory said that it was a little bit more right in a sweet spot, but he had 15 minutes earlier basically been not much of a different distance out on 18 and, you know, craps the bed, sends it into the bunker. And okay, maybe I didn't end up hearing in the end whether he played with a gap wedge on the playoff hole or not.
He did.
But it was with the gap wedge, right?
Same club he hit on the regulation.
To be able to do that 15 minutes later and put it a couple feet away after that is just unbelievable. Unbelievable resilience.
Given his history of choking in these situations, and everyone expected him to, you know, before the tournament even started, everyone expected him to choke at one point. And for him to actually start to choke, overcome that, and redeem himself is just such a story of resilience and overcoming one's demons that I do think that it kind of rescued golf, at least temporarily, because it had gotten kind of dull post-Tiger with all this live nonsense and the best players are not always playing and some of the best players are no good anymore because they don't play enough, like DJ. I mean, we've lost so much talent out there recently. And I think Rory, at least temporarily, rescued golf for the casual fan like me.
And don't forget, too, you know, in all that live stuff, Rory was the face of the PGA. He was the company man who got rolled out there. And then the PGA turned their back on him.
Yep.
After everything he did, and then all of a sudden the announcement comes out that they were going to merge, and like he had no idea, nobody had any idea. I mean, they really put him in an awkward, bad spot, and they screwed him over. So this felt, you know, it felt like he deserved this in a lot of reasons.
Yeah, but let's not lose sight of the fact too that he is among six men in the history of golf who have won a Grand Slam. I mean, that's a pretty big accomplishment historically.
Boy, that graphic though was, you know, the more they put it up that this is his 11th attempt and everybody else was like 1, 2, 4 times.
Yep.
I mean, it was like, my God, if this guy doesn't do it this time. And he even said himself, you know, I was starting to wonder whether or not I was ever going to get it.
But you know, House, that makes a really interesting point though. Those guys, I mean, Tiger aside, right, I guess, but like—
And Jack.
And Jack. But like the guys were hot. Like they had hot stretches where they won all four of the majors, right? Rory doing it now, look at the longevity and how long he's been at the top of his game. I mean, when was Congressional, 2012 or 11?
I don't know. He hadn't won a major since 14, so it might have been right around in there.
Yeah. What did he win then?
Maybe the Open.
He won the Open at Congressional. He won the PGA.
No, I'm saying that the British.
No, in
the
14. British. Was it the British? British? Yeah.
Well, anyway, hey, I think it's interesting, too, to mention Scottie Scheffler, who everybody sort of wrote off as having a horrible week. What, did he come in fifth, sixth? I mean.
Yeah.
That's a horrible week for the guy? Okay, I'll take that.
No, he was fourth.
What do you guys think about bangers and mash for dinner next year at the Masters dinner?
Shepherd's pie.
The pint?
Yeah.
I don't know. It was good golf to watch. You know, one of the funny things is when the round started and you had all that hand slapping of Bryson and everything, and it felt like maybe the gallery was going to be for Bryson, but it was pretty clear as the day went on that overall the gallery was for Rory. Don't you guys think?
Particularly towards the end.
Yeah, I think as he started to close in, people started.
When Bryson choked it away, there was no, you couldn't compare the two. You couldn't compare
that's true.
The crowds because they came alive for Rory at the end and Bryson was long gone.
Bryson is such a tool.
Talking about a choke job.
He is such a tool.
I really, I really think the Masters patrons would have supported Rory if literally they'd gone head to head match play all the way to the end. I mean, Bryson would have got a lot of fans, but I think the Masters patrons are the type that they understand history better than any other, and they would have supported Rory.
Well, they've got to do something because, I mean, what do we have? How many LIV golfers finished in the top 15? Five?
Probably. Like they had two in the, well, they have two in the top five with him and Reed.
Yeah. So they've got to get this sorted out quickly because it is killing golf. I don't disagree with it. And if Bryson's not, I'm sorry, Bryson's one of the top, I mean, he's top, what, three golfers in the country right now?
Yeah.
Yo, for sure.
He's got to get back. I mean, if you're not facing him every week or whatever.
I just got to say again, from a TV viewer perspective, being able to watch a sporting event now on this stage without everybody up with their iPhone up taking a picture is such a beautiful thing to watch.
I love it.
It was just so great. Just fans are dialed in and they don't have to worry about anything else than the memories they're making in their mind. That's the best part of the Masters.
How amazing is it that these fans on 18 are actually relying on the scoreboard, the manual scoreboard, to follow what happened on 17? How wild is that?
Right.
Because when they put up the score,
that's right.
Cheer.
Yeah.
Can we just mention Nance for a minute?
I want to know how House is he going to miss him?
My God.
That like, was years?
Who writes this drivel? It's that getting worse and worse.
I am so sick of listening to him. He and Al Michaels can retire tomorrow, and I won't miss either one of them.
Oh, I mean, I usually like him, but that was awful.
It's a new laxative for me.
Different than he always does.
Aren't you even more excited the Gators beat Houston? Come on. That guy, unbelievable.
All right. Anything else on the Masters? Pope, you got something else?
No, I was going to say, let's look ahead real quick because, you know, after the Masters, you say, okay, is the actual Grand Slam in play? So Quail Hollow is the PGA next month. Rory's won there four times. He can dominate that course. And then Oakmont is the U.S. Open, which is another pretty wide open course. And Royal Portrush is the final for the Open. Imagine if Rory somehow ran the table. Milk, I know you can't imagine this, but
oh God, please let it happen. Just for Milk.
Goes to Northern Ireland to his home course.
So just so you know, I played Portrush. It's still my favorite course anywhere. When you come up to Portrush, there is a giant, giant mural on the side of a building of Rory and Graham and I think Lowry. Yeah. I mean, like these guys are like more than God there.
He won't win there.
Oh my God. If Rory won at Portrush, my God.
Too much pressure. Way too much pressure.
I know, but that's the thing, Milk. Now that he's won, there's a theory.
No,
the pressure is off. Like now he's gonna make a run for another three or four majors.
He
in the
might
next
win another
years.
Green jacket, but he will not win there. And I'm willing to bet on it.
It's
right
like
now.
Charles Leclerc winning Monaco and Monza,
right,
in the same year.
Yeah,
right. His home race and Ferrari's home race.
I'm sorry. Obviously, this whatever Scheffler did with his hand at Christmas time is still affecting him. He said it right. He's going to get better.
Of course he is.
It's like we all forgot about Scotty Scheffler all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I mean, I expect he'll be back by this summer.
We forgot about him and he came in fourth.
Right. It's like, who's that?
That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else on golf? Rooster, give a little love to another one of our sponsors.
Yeah. Our second sponsor is also an excellent group if you happen to be a plaintiff's lawyer, and it's called Injury Board, and our friend Milk is the membership recruiting director of this company.
Rush chair.
We're all members, and if you
if we call him the pledge master, you think it violates his parole.
Yeah, just if he says drop and give me 20, you have to see if
we're in trouble with W&L if we say pledge master.
But look, the Injury Board puts on some of the best networking, education, and just social friendship organizations in the country. They've got lawyers from all over the United States, Canada, and Western Europe. And, you know, you learn a lot, you meet a lot of great people, you get a lot of great referrals from other parts of the country. and you make long-lasting friendships. So I can't recommend this organization enough. Go to injuryboard.org.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, well done. All right, this is the segment that I really wanted to talk about. And it could just be a long punchable face segment with lots of punches to go around. What is happening in college football, particularly at Tennessee? Somebody explain what in the actual fuck is going on.
Well, I told you this weekend I wanted to give Tennessee a lasso. some of it is we don't have to face Nico anymore at Florida, but today I find out that, I don't know, maybe it was one of you guys posted it, that maybe goes back to the college playoff, that he was making demands about back then that he would hold out of the playoff if he wasn't paid more.
Supposedly it was him and some other, not just him, other Tennessee players.
Other Tennessee players. I think Tennessee they totally did the right thing. They had no other choice but to get rid of this guy. He's clearly a problem and a massive cancer. And I think he thought, well, I mean, what are they going to do? Release me? You know, come on.
Release them.
Which I guess that's how you have to talk about college players now. But I think they did the absolute right thing. College football is an absolute mess right now. Of course, House will support this whole thing if he goes to Tulane, which I know he is.
Milk, explain to the listeners what the last straw was for Tennessee. He held out from practice.
He held up, right. Yeah. He didn't show up. He's
because he wanted more NIL.
He wants money. $4 million, right? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
He wants to get to $4 million. I think that's what Carson Beck's making this year.
Three.
So now it's just like free agency. Well, what's that wide receiver making? What's that quarterback making? Beck's getting $4 million. I need to be at $4 million. And he's just like, well, I'm going to hold out. I'm not going to go to any of the spring game, the meetings, the practices. And Tennessee's like, well, okay, fine. No, we're not.
They had to do it. I agree with you. I'm giving them a lasso also.
I think so.
Well, you know, you know where he's probably going to end up, according to everything I've read today.
UCLA?
Mm-mm.
Belichick.
Yep. Carolina. Mm. That's where the transfer crystal balls have been falling today. So who knows? You know, Belichick, I don't think
they're going to pay him $4 million?
They can. Well,
Carolina's got the money now, and he wants to make a splash. I wasn't sold on Nico anyway. I don't know. We'll see.
That was my other comment. This is he's good. Very.
By the way, I have PTSD from saying Nico, so I'm going to stop saying that.
That's sort of beside the point, though. His talent.
Yeah.
I mean, I go back. Speaking of North Carolina, I go back to Roy Williams. Roy Williams partly retired because of this bullshit. He couldn't deal with it anymore. Tony Bennett from UVA definitely retired because of this bullshit this year in mid-season. Just walked out.
Jim Larrañaga in Miami.
You're not going to be able to keep good coaches if they have to deal with this kind of crap. And the long-term consequences of this is going to be really bad for college sports.
All right. I'm going to take the young whippersnappers side of the coin of all of this. I really am because... Okay.
Because you listened to Stephen A. today?
Well, no, I didn't hear Stephen A., but I did hear Dan Orlovsky, who had some really great points. But I'll say this, if there's a punch to be thrown here, it really goes in the direction of the NCAA. They have created this monster, and I believe that Nico will only be the canary in the coal mine. Nico will not be the first. He will not be the last. There have probably been others that have already tried to do this. His name and his stature and who he's going to be in the future, I think he'll be a highly touted, recruited quarterback for the NFL. But the kid is whatever he is, 19, 20 years old. He's got like Dan Orlovsky was saying on ESPN, he's got a chance to make a couple more $1 million when you're 20 years old. He's seeing coaches leave when they want to leave, okay? Like, you're all talking about these guys that left because they had high principle morals. There's lots of other coaches that are going for the almighty dollar. And
short-sighted.
Okay, but again, yes, there is a very good point that was made about this is one of the first times that a situation like this has really tainted a locker room. Like your quarterback walks out, doesn't show up on practice. So yeah, I do have a problem with that. But otherwise, it is a very compelling point that, come on, Nico knows he's not there at Tennessee or any other school because the school is desperate to give him an education. They want to win a national title. They want the dollars that come from the TV. They want everything else. All of these kids, Nico and all of them, they're all servants of these schools. And so if you're going to be a servant, get your best money. Who knows? You guys have said before on this pod, who knows what kind of blindside hit that you're going to get? You're going to have a concussion. You're going to have your knee blown out. Get your $5 million while you can. What's wrong with that?
House, I agree with the first thing you said, that the NCAA gets a big punch in this. But I remember a guy named Peyton Manning going back to school for an extra year to enjoy being a college player and playing college sports and to be on campus for that. And I'm not saying that he did anything great. My bigger point is it's sad that that's not compelling to anybody anymore. It's sad that we live in an era where nobody gives a shit about that kind of experience, right? About what that means. College football for everybody, and you guys know, I'm probably the least interested. I like watching college football, but you know, I just think I have my own issues with it.
You know, you're a baseball guy.
Yeah. And I take the NFL over college any day of the week, my whole life. But the people who love college football are so dedicated to their teams, to the universities, to their communities, where the schools are, the little towns. The towns go nuts on, you know, Saturdays. Does any of that matter anymore? It just, I don't know what matters anymore in general.
They're going to support the uniform the same way as the pros.
I'll tell you what still matters in all team sports at all levels is the locker room. And this is why I think this is a short-sighted move by Nico. He now has the reputation that he's going to let his teammates down for personal gain. And he's poisoned the Tennessee locker room. Even if they didn't cut him, there would have been problems. And if I'm a GM of an NFL team, I'm going to think real hard about using a number one draft pick for this guy as my team leader.
But the problem, Rooster, is this is all the guys now. This is just how it is. I mean, I think there are problems when you look forward to locker rooms in the NFL and how people are going to, you know, are there teams anymore? Are there going to be strong teams anymore? These guys don't understand team.
You had thousands of kids enter the college basketball portal.
Right.
Thousands, some of whom were the stars on their team. They could have run it back and still had a great team. I mean, I understand that kind of the drama of how and what leaked and everything about this Nico situation, but it's not a lot different than what we've been seeing in college sports forever, and not forever, since the rules changed, since the portal, since the NIL.
Yeah.
I blame the NCAA for not reining it in.
But he's also getting awful advice from someone. His agent.
Well, he doesn't have an agent.
It's his dad.
It's dad.
He's got a family friend, Milk. From Florida, Cordell Landers, family friend from Florida.
I completely realize that negotiations are ongoing in college football and that people want more money and they're having these conversations. But I mean, that's the problem. I don't have a problem if Nico went to Tennessee and said, I want $1 million more a year. And here's why. And blah, blah, blah. But this whole like, probably asked for it. They said no. And now he's going to hold out. Just enter the transfer. I mean, you don't have to do anything anymore. You literally could just wake up and be like, put my name in the portal. I'm done.
So little old Tulane has a freshman quarterback, Darian Mensah. And they really, between him and Summerall, they put together a really, really nice run. If the kid comes back, they're definitely the group of five favorite to lock up one of the playoff seeds. But he leaves for $5 million to Duke. And look, nobody bleeds blue and green like me and the Tulane Green Wave. Am I really going to blame Darian Mensah for leaving for $5 million when he's 19, 20 years old to go to Duke for that? It sucks. And I hear you, Bison, and I'd like team to stay together. And we now have like no quarterback, and the group of five thing is maybe just a distant dream. But, you know, like these kids are kids and they're being used by colleges. I get it. I'm bummed, but I get it.
So, House, you know, pendulums always swing too far one way. And for so long, these kids really were taken advantage of and they weren't getting paid. And now the pendulum's gone the other way, where they have a ridiculous amount of power. They can get so much money. They're basically unlimited free agents, which we don't even have in pro sports. They're free agent every year, but it's going to swing back. This is going to get worse before it gets better.
That's true.
The first step, I think, needs to be some financial disincentive for multiple moves through the portal. All right, you can move one time. The guy from Tulane moves. That's fine. If he decides that he's moving again next year, he needs to take a financial hit for that. There needs to be some disincentive to do this every year.
If this is a breach of contract, right? Like if you literally have a contract and you breach it, why not sue the other school for some sort of tortious interference? I mean, it just seems like there's right. going to be contract law around this. Like just old school contract law should start governing this at some point.
That's interesting.
Not good for Nico.
Non-competes, right?
If you're 18 years old and you sign the contract, then it's binding.
Which he did, right?
Right.
I'm assuming.
Right. And if you leave early, you should have to give the money back. But that's, I mean, it sounds like maybe the universities, maybe they just need to have better contract lawyers.
And really, can we stop calling 18-year-olds little children? I mean, they used to go to frickin' war.
Well, that's right? a different conversation.
People went to World War II at age 16 and 17.
All right, but Rooster, you had an expert on here who said your brain doesn't even develop till you're 25.
I don't care. When you're 18 years old, you have to take responsibility at some point in your life. And
yeah, there's
especially
still
if you're 18 years old and you know you're playing football and you're pissed because you're getting $4 million instead of $5 million. I mean, come on.
That's part of the problem.
House, Rooster was in country at 18, all right? He knows what he's talking about.
Never gets old milk.
You know what's crazy about this topic? It is just, I don't know how many podcasts our topic has been the NCAA getting worse and worse, and they always seem to one-up themselves.
I wonder why. It's like, and by the way, it's like, of course Belichick's going to get involved in this.
Of course, that's
like,
right.
Of course he is.
The
like,
first thing that's going to happen, he's going to sign the most egregious kid in the whole thing, right? The
I'm
most
actually,
egregious situation.
Like, mad at myself that I didn't pick UNC as this guy's eventual home, because that just makes perfect sense.
You could probably get a good prop bet in right now.
Oh, you're right.
Is there one on where he ends up?
Let's move along here. We're going to be on the NCAA until 7 o'clock.
Yeah, I know. All right. Anything else on that? I guess we got a little NFL draft coming up. Rooster, that's your thing, right? You love the prospects. And
yeah, we're House and I were going to lead a discussion about what teams need coming into this draft. And there are some things that seem set in stone. Like it seems clear that Tennessee's taking Cam Ward. We've talked about Cleveland coming up number two, needing to draft a quarterback because of their financial problems they have with Deshaun Watson. I mean, they're in handcuffs. It doesn't seem like they're going to do that, House. It seems like they're taking either Hunter or Abdul Carter.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to go Cam Ward, Travis Hunter, and Abdul Carter,
yeah.
Which is kind of crazy. That means that the Browns think that between Deshaun Watson and Kenny Pickett, they would rather go with that than, I don't know, there's definitely some other choices, including Shedeur Sanders.
Yeah.
So when I looked at this, there's, Rooster, I don't know how you added up, but there are basically five teams where the top need is really a quarterback. I've got the Jets, the Browns, the Steelers, the Titans, and the Giants.
What about the Cowboys?
Well, I actually do have. I just don't know whether the Cowboys would use up a first or second round on that. I do think they'll draft a quarterback, but I don't know that they'll go make it that high of a priority.
Yeah, the Titans probably have the best quarterback of between the Titans, Browns, and Giants. The Titans probably have the best quarterback on their roster, and yet they're going to take a quarterback. It seems like the Browns and Giants have decided they're going for a late round quarterback, which I'm not entirely unhappy about with respect to the Giants. I think it's pretty tough to pass up on Abdul Carter. He looks like he's, you know, if he stays healthy, he's a Hall of Fame pass rusher.
Oh, careful.
You got
with
Jameis, baby. Don't worry.
I remember a guy named Chase Young.
Yeah,
and
that's what everybody was
saying about him.
But you know, you're hearing all this stuff.
I think Carter's like Micah Parsons. I think he's just baby Micah Parsons.
100.
Yeah. Yep.
So I'm okay taking him. I would also be okay taking Shadur or trading down and trying to get an offensive lineman and then later a quarterback. I think Quinn Ewers is way overlooked in this draft for some reason because he was hurt much last year. No, he's hurt the whole year. He was throwing better than Jackson Dart or any of these quarterbacks in Louisville.
He looks like the sixth highest ranked quarterback.
Yeah, I don't
agree
with
that. Why is Sanders falling so fast? I mean, I see a lot of them, and he's like going to Pittsburgh at like 21. A month ago, he was a top five pick.
I think he's going to go to, actually, House, I would add the Saints to that list because.
Yes, I think, yeah, the Saints.
I think the Saints are going to take him at 9.
That's where Bell has him as of today, taking Shadur at number 9 with the Saints.
I mean, I think at 9, that's a pretty good deal to get him there.
Oh, Sanders?
Yeah.
Okay. I've seen people mock drafts saying Stewart, Shamar Stewart.
Are you buying or selling on Shadur Sanders?
I don't know. I like him. I mean, I don't know what kind of competition he faced this year. And it's nice to have Travis Hunter as your wide receiver. By the way, I don't fault Cleveland at all for taking him. I think he could be like generational talent.
Except he looks like one good hit would break him in half.
Yeah. Could fix
Here's
that.
The thing. I've seen Shadur Steroids. Sanders play live twice. And what people forget is, yes, he had not just Hunter, but other really good receivers. He also had a horrible offensive line. Like every single passing play, he was running for his life. And the rap on him is he doesn't stand in the pocket long enough. He's not very fast. He doesn't have a rocket for an arm. Look at his stats. He did, and he accomplished all of that under pressure every single play. I mean, they literally had a Swiss cheese offensive line. People just ran right through. So, I think he's way better than he's getting credit for right now. I think his dad's big mouth kind of hurt his standing in the draft. Early on, making all these demands about where he would and wouldn't play.
I saw one thing that said he was a generational talent, and now I have a real bone to pick with that phrase.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, if you're a generational talent, doesn't that mean that's it?
You go one.
Like not just that you go one, but that you're never going to see a talent like that again in the next 15 years, right?
Yeah.
A generation. So we are calling Caleb Williams a generational talent. And now the next year you have another generational talent. I don't think it works that way. You could say it for Travis Hunter maybe because of that, for that reason. I saw someone say it about Shadur Sanders.
My fear is that Jerry Jones, God, he just loves the spotlight. And if Shadur looks like he might be there in the 10, 11, I mean, Jerry's going to have to be talked out of trying to trade up and get him. I'm telling you, just watch.
Jerry's going to make the smartest move he's made since he got Parsons, and he's going to take Ashton Jeanty. And that's going to be your running back. You don't think so?
No, I think the Raiders take him.
Yeah, Mel has him going to the Raiders at 6 right now.
They've got a set. How old is their coach, Pete Carroll? 72?
He's probably like Saban's age, 72, 73.
803?
Pete Carroll's not going to listen to any noise about building from starting with the offensive and defensive lines. He wants game breakers right now.
All right, so I have a question for you guys. I think it's a hard question. Who is the player or the team that throws the draft into chaos? Like the pick that everybody goes, oh, and that screws up everybody else's plans downdraft.
Well, I think the two linchpin picks are going to be the Raiders if they take Jeanty, and the Saints now that they need a quarterback if they take Sanders. If he falls that far, the Giants could throw everything into disarray and take him three, which, you know, suddenly somebody with like the you're Jacksonville and you desperately need a defensive lineman and Carter is there at three, Abdul Carter at five. That's a great pick.
Well, it's a great point because there will be Bison. There will be, who was it? Will Levis that kept sitting there and sitting there and sitting there and sitting there. You know, there will be someone. I just don't think that's going to be Shador. This notion that he might drop as far as 21, that would absolutely floor me. If that were to happen, I think that's your player. But look, beyond some of these kind of flashy names, when I looked at team needs in this passing league, there is desperation for cornerbacks, and it's a pretty okay draft. But I'm telling you, there's at least like eight teams where their number one priority should be drafting a corner. And the same goes for the edge. You know, there's a lot of teams that need an edge rusher. And so,
well, those are our two top needs for sure.
I think Washington really needs an edge rusher.
Yeah, that's our number one need.
I think you shored up a lot with corner last year. You did a great job shoring up the corner situation with Lattimore and however you pronounce his last name.
Sandersville, yeah.
But edge you need.
Yeah, no question.
Well, you need the edge. You need the edge in the cornerback, but you also need offensive tackles.
Are you talking about the Commanders or just in general?
No, all teams do.
It's a very important position.
And I think we have one guy who's going to drop because of injuries. And then somebody like the Eagles will make one of their traditional picks where they pick the best player, you know, that nobody drafted
from because Alabama.
They were worried about something. And they're going to wind up with Josh Simmons, who 2 years ago everyone has had as the number one offensive lineman in the country. And then even at the beginning of this year, he was clearly in the top one or two. And then he got hurt. If he's healthy again, someone's going to get a steal by taking Josh Simmons.
I know Kansas City doesn't pick, obviously, till at the end of the first round. But if the Chiefs, after that Super Bowl, do not take an offensive lineman to protect Patrick Mahomes, that is GM malpractice. If I can get a prop bet on any position being taken, it's the Chiefs taking an offensive lineman. Because if they shore that up, they'll be right back in it.
Yeah, yeah. All right, anything else on the draft? We still got a little ways to go, right? It's the 24th, 25th, is that right?
Next Thursday, right? Or
a week from this Thursday. So we'll be back talking a little bit more about some of these positions on the next pod.
Milk, all who right. do you hope the Bucks take?
I'd kill for an edge. We've got to put pressure on the quarterback. It's a desperation for us.
I do think Hassan Reddick will help, but I don't think it's enough.
Yeah.
For Tampa.
I mean, that was helpful. I'd take a safety too. Need another one.
All right. Anything else on draft? It'll be fun. Time to punch someone. Who's got a punch?
I feel like I've been punching the NCAA for the last half hour.
Yeah, we have. I've got a punch.
I do too, but you go first.
I'm going to punch the Vice President of the United States. Not for political purposes, but because he just dropped the national championship trophy and broke it when they're hosting Ohio State at the White House and they handed him the trophy. He just dropped it.
What?
And it fell apart.
Yes, did you see this?
No, this.
He dropped. God. He broke the trophy.
He broke the trophy. So this is not a political statement at all. This is just, you're getting punched for, don't drop the national championship trophy.
Even in the age of participation trophies, that's the closest thing that effete little bastard ever got to a sports trophy.
All right, that's my punch. Rooster, you got one?
Yeah, I'm going to punch all sports talking heads collectively over this
us?
Pat McAfee story.
Yeah.
Good call.
We're all guilty. I think we're all guilty of this, and I hope this is a lesson to everyone. There was an anonymous message board, unsubstantiated internet rumor about some freshman girl, I'm not even going to name her name or her school, alleging that she was sleeping with her boyfriend's father. And it was false, but it got picked up by two pretty popular members of the Barstool Sports team, KFC Barstool and Jack Mack. They didn't post it on a Barstool sanctioned thing. They did it on their own personal social. And then it got picked up by Pat McAfee, who, without naming her name, just continued to spread the rumor. And this poor young woman wound up having to move to a undisclosed location. The campus police were worried about her safety. Her family was just torn apart by it. She had to drop her classes. And imagine how the father, the father of her boyfriend, must have felt, right? What a disgusting accusation. Gosh. Turns out not to be true. But what happens, because everybody's got to be talking sports 24 hours a day, is there's no journalism anymore. No one calls her up and says, hey, can I ask you about this this story out there? Is it true? No, they just repeat rumors. And like I say, I'm pretty sure we've done the same thing on this show. I hope we learn our lesson. I hope everybody learns their lesson and never does that kind of thing again, because this is what can happen.
I don't think we talked about that situation.
No, we didn't talk about this situation, but I think we've joked about other stories we've heard without knowing whether they're true. And I just think we all need to make an effort to be better about that. Even McAfee agrees. I'm not punching Pat McAfee. I'm not punching Dave Portnoy. I think Dave Portnoy actually did the right thing and said he's disgusted that this happened and he wants to meet with her and mediate a settlement with her. It's just rampant in the whole industry. It's rampant and it needs to stop. It's yellow journalism.
I'd be happy to punch either of those guys.
A teachable moment instead of a punch.
All right. Any other punches? Who's got a lasso?
I've got, I guess it's more than a golf clap. I guess it really is a lasso. Bison's own Liverpool team is being coached by a first-year manager that was stepping in the shoes of some combination of, you name it, Bill Belichick, Nick Saban, whatever. Jurgen Klopp is, I don't know. I mean, he is more than a statue. He is everything to that Liverpool football club. And everyone expected Liverpool to be good, probably make it back to champions, probably be in the top four, but most certainly going to be behind Manchester City, probably even behind Newcastle, probably be behind maybe even Chelsea. But in comes this Arne Slot from Feyenoord, a Dutch team. And what has he done? He has just like lapped the entire. Yeah. I just think this is remarkable. And what I think is the best football league in the world to come in and in your first year take an aging team that definitely has injuries and just lap the field and make it a laugher coming in is a pretty incredible story. And I don't know if it really equals to a lasso, but being a rookie coach, stepping into the shoes of somebody like Jurgen Klopp and then winning the whole thing, it's a pretty cool story.
It's like Barry Switzer.
Yeah, it's like what I guess Hubert would have done. I mean, had they finished it, I think he was deserving of a lasso anyway, but I think, you know, stepping into somebody like Roy Williams, stepping into somebody like Jurgen Klopp and in your first season doing that, even with whatever talent you have, it's incredible.
I will have you know, House, that I watched the game yesterday and had the same thought when they showed him on the sideline. I actually thought, this guy, what a season to walk into.
Incredible.
Yeah. Any other lassos? Buzzer beaters?
I just want to say, I think the Suns firing of Coach Bud makes me think of the three most surprising things about the NBA coming into the playoffs. The Suns go out and get the big three. The Sixers go out and they have the big three after getting Paul George. Neither team makes the playoffs. Shocking. It's hard to believe. And nobody would have predicted that those two teams would not make the playoffs at the beginning of the year. And yet, and the Pistons, who won 14 games last year, are in the playoffs, and they're looking like a team you do not want to play. I think it turns out they're not playing the Knicks in the first round, which I'm happy about because the Pistons look awfully strong to me.
I was going to, guys, bring you a quick update on the Masters. Biggest audience in 7 years, Sunday afternoon. It peaked at 20 million, like, basically from 16 on. So, unbelievable.
Everyone was tuning ratings. In.
We are 15 games into the baseball season, and of all things, a lot of eyes should be on the AL West matchup that starts tonight between the Angels and the Rangers, because, sorry, Pope, but the whole world of baseball is rooting for Mike Trout to finally get to the top. And the Angels, 15 games in, look like they might actually compete this year. And the Rangers are doing what they're supposed to do, but this is a nice early season matchup. I'm going to be watching some of this.
How are the Angels doing this? I've been watching their win-loss record. I'm like, who's on that team besides Mike Trout?
They got young pitching. I think it was either 2 or 3 years ago. I think their first 20 picks in the draft were pitchers.
Wow.
Something crazy like that. They just invested in pitching.
Yeah, we played them last week. Do y'all know this Kyren Paris dude?
Mm-mm.
Look out for him. He went yard like the entire series. Like,
wow.
3 home runs. He's having like an unbelievable start. So,
all right.
Final buzzer or quick buzzer. The play-in games for the NBA playoffs, and we'll preview those next week, the first round matchups. But the Warriors are fighting for their life. They have to win against the Grizzlies, or they fight for sudden death against the winner of the Mavs Kings in the West. The Hawks Magic play for the winner there is number 7 seed. The loser has to play the winner of the Heat and the Bulls. We'll get our final numbers after the play-in tournaments. But the Warriors, who've had the third best record in the NBA since the All-Star break, or since Jimmy Butler came aboard, they lost a huge game to the Clips, so they need to win just to make the playoffs.
What weapon do you think Ja Morant is going to bring to this game? Do you think he's going to bring the gun or the hand grenade? Or
no,
something else?
Sticking with the hand grenade.
Both.
Oh, yeah. Flamethrower.
Can somebody explain to me how, after 15 games in Major League Baseball, the Braves have the same record as the White Sox?
I don't understand.
What's going on in Atlanta?
What is happening?
I watched them this weekend. They're not a good team.
What is wrong with
that?
They are
a bad team.
Sale hadn't pitched well. I mean, they got off to a horrible start. They're, 0-7? I mean, they're just digging. They're having to dig out. It's going to take a while.
And they're losing games badly.
Just remember, somebody on this podcast said between the Phillies, Mets, and Braves, one of those teams would not end up in the top three in the
NL
East.
Is that you, Bison?
That's our college baseball player.
Who would have taken more money to leave Georgetown, just so it's clear? He would have left.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
I have a question as part of my buzzer beater. As you guys know, John Daly posts up at the Augusta Hooters every Masters.
It's awesome.
This was shocking to me. Do you know how much merchandise he sold at last year's Masters in 4 days?
How much?
$780,000.
Wow.
Over 4 days.
What is he selling?
That is
quality
swag.
There's a great story on ESPN.com about it. I mean, it's everything. Oh, yeah. He sells cigarettes, cigars.
He's like one of those guys like on the street with his jacket, like watches.
Cigars,
you need watches?
Cigarettes.
Only in America.
Wow. It's unbelievable.
All right, guys. Anything else? Have a good week, everybody. We'll be back with NBA playoffs.
Go Birds.
Later.